We thank the doctor. Now we'll listen to Diana. She's a researcher and professor emeritus of Clark University in Massachusetts. And she's also worked in rural communities in the Dominican Republic, Kenya, and Mexico. Her line of research is forestry, agriculture, and political ecology. The title of her presentations, Sciences to Confront Walls and Build Worlds, Part 2, The Logic and a Relational Vision of Ecology in the Face of the Current Situation. We will listen to Diana. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for being here and for the invitation to be here again with this group. We are very excited about this process, what we've heard in these last few days, what we've seen, what we've learned, and what is to come to follow up on this process. Science is to confront walls and build worlds. I was a little bothered by the invitation. There was a wall, writer's block. And I came up with nothing for weeks, but suddenly Luis and I worked together on philosophy and critique. And I was asking myself, come Zapatista defense, why do we, is her name not denouncement? For many years, I was doing denouncements, but now I'm tired of that. And now I would like to speak more profoundly about the defense, the resistance, how we understand that as Oscar spoke about the war for water in Bolivia. More rather than resisting, it's re-existing. But especially relevant to the situation, this is the path of the indigenous people. So what I'm seeking is an ecology of resistance, transformation, and re-existence. Easy, right? But after hearing Luis and all the problems that we have, we need help for this first step. I hope you're ready, because we would be difficult students. We've been trained, de-educated, and distorted for so many years in academies and professions. And so there's a lot to learn and practice. First, I want to speak about the fact that for me, it's hard to think about just one wall. I know about neoliberalism, Marxism. I'm from a family of miners, workers in Quebec. I understand class, but I think there are many other types of walls that are all bound up together. Ecology is the science of relationships, and we are all tied up together, biophysically, materially, and economically, politically. And we don't organize in a way to allow us to resist. We are all bound up for a reason. So I want to think about being in face of multiple walls in a world wall. It's like a phantasmagorical world. Ecological sciences, I think, can help us to understand the multiple walls, to move through them, and to overcome them. This is not one just wall, it's many walls. And they're not even square. And we're in something like this. It's in this, like the film Matrix. It's like a jail, ideological jail, and also material jail of many dimensions. We can't see what's above, what's below, where the four directions are. We're disoriented. I think we're in a world wall that disorients us profoundly. And here, a view of a city, we don't know which one, but so many are like this now, that there's walls all over, and several constructions, structures, and superstructures in a fractal form. Smaller and smaller and smaller, but there's walls and walls and walls and roofs, and everything is to contain us, to jail us, to put us in a tunnel or channel us in this world that's so open like a flower that, but there we are. So, looking for images about crossing the wall, passing through the wall, I wasn't thinking above or below or left to right or right to left or above to below, but still we're in the world wall. We're not leaving the game. We're just repositioning us. We move, but we're not leaving the world wall. A portal. I like this. I saw Star Trek when I was little that changed me forever. We want to go through a magic tunnel. We have to leave the world wall in a different way. We have to stop seeing it. We have to refuse it. Reorganize its axes, its square axes, its multiplied axes that package us. And science is essential for us to enter this portal in other worlds, to build with new logic, new visions. It's not, we don't have to abandon all the good things. It's to systematize knowledge, seek democratic forms among everybody, to know what knowledge is. But we can do this with a different orientation, another magnetic field and gravitational field. We will reposition ourselves radically to do another kind of science. How can I say this? It's because I learned with people all over the from different parts of the world. As a scientist, I didn't know. I was seduced by imperialism, development, and science, because I could have an impact somewhere else. Little me. But then I realized it was a imperialist game. It was very unjust, very unequal. But I also took advantage of this privilege of being in different places to learn about other worlds and try to enter fully the ecologies and in the daily life and knowledge of the different places, the sciences they practice there, to practice a science that then in the 80s was called agroforestry. It's like agroecology here. This was in eastern Kenya, a landscape which looks very balanced with trees, with grass, but this was considered a disaster site. Africa was always below. It's always the other. There was a drought, and everyone saw Africa as being suffering, lost, as a desperate place. Although capitalists were managing capitalism in the 70s, 80s. So they were trying to bring science from everywhere to help them to adjust them, adjust their economy. Nice process. They almost destroyed all the independent African states during this drought while I was in Nairobi for 7 years with Luis. This broken earth, this broken land, burnt land, brought a science of charity or a science of recovery, rescue of anything that a science that says anything is better than what they had. So I was a participant and observer of a terrible process, and this was a significant part of my education as a scientist. Also, this time, many myths were developed about women, poor women that have to walk. So many pictures of African women carrying firewood on their back, like a beast that was sacrificed and desperate. Every time that I look for something about firewood, Africa, forests, there was this woman, this vision so dehumanized of women as victims. This woman has cattle. She's pretty good. Despite this drought, she's walking to look for water, to find some friends and bring her animals to look for fodder and drink water. She's going to see other people on the path that she knows. She's not in profound suffering, this woman. But that's how this is portrayed by the scientific establishment of assistance and sustainable agriculture, this rescue agriculture. Also, this poor woman who has so many children that she can't take care of them and doesn't allow the poor earth to rest. This is like a caricature of a child. What does this mean? The child is resting, waiting for his mother, who's working with a group of women. He's doing conservation, soil conservation, collectively, which is obligatory, but also working with trees collectively. So then, the time, there were people who came in caravans and trucks to sterilize women. This vision of a desperate Africa, degraded land, brought people with charity to create genocide, to take away the women's ability to reproduce. A midwife told me, a doctor told me to join this effort, and I said, get out of my room. You're speaking to me of unnatural bestial things. I will not participate, and you're not going to pay me for this. But she'd worked with doctors. She was working collaboratively. She liked it. But then this idea came up. This vision of the environment created a scientific industry of control of population and of women's bodies. So a global problem with an obsession without context is placed on the bodies of women. One of the first times that I found this in global ecology in the body of someone, the first time that I saw global ecology in the body of someone, in this case, women. And also, there's also vasectomies and stories of vasectomies of men, but here this was the operation of women, sterilization of women. Also, women organized, but what was seen from outside, they saw women as a statue, as heroic socialism. I will fix everything. I'm strong, I have a lot of muscles, I have a big hand, and I'm going to do everything. I'm going to fix it. I'll clean this house, this land. I'll do all this work of soil conservation, of planting trees. And many agronomists had this attitude. Bureaucrats, technocrats, all doing everything, I think, and the women not participating. I spent time with them, and their way of working was very different. It wasn't very regimented. It wasn't a Henry Ford factory. They were all together with the African women were there with their children, the elders, older women taking care of the children, and also composing songs to discipline the chief in the public plaza. They converted this workplace in a site to organize, to get together and work. And when they knew that the trees that I was offering were not forestry, that they were fruit and fodder, they said, "This is ridiculous. They obligate us to work here, but we're going to bring it to our houses, to our collective sites." So they taught me that things were not as they appeared, and there were inequalities and abuse of labor of women for things that were scientifically planned. They work together in their own plots, and they we began to work together in other ways, by other calendars, other geographies. This was a key moment for me. A big moment in the thought, and now I'm talking about a different community where we're consulting with a state project. And I see three women, and they're carrying firewood, and also axe and pick, or shovel and pick, and they're knitting their baskets that they make for themselves to carry things. They're weaving these baskets to sell them. First, I didn't take pictures of people I didn't know, but here I stopped and asked if I could take pictures, because agronomists and forestry people say that women are not capable of managing natural resources. And I see these women who were using the sisal or henequen fiber, and they're bringing products from trees. They're restoring grass for a rich man. In exchange, they have the right to look for firewood and bring in their cattle during a drought. In an unequal situation, but they're redefining it to survive, with the expectation of surviving in the drought. And I just want to teach the foresters that women can. So I see this photo now differently. There's three women that are living in rural area. I say peasants live in the field. Agroforestry people are obsessed with private plot, a little plot where they want to have a mix of everything. But they weren't looking at the women and seeing them as nomadic. They're in the home. They're in their habitat. They're in their workspace. They're in their marketplace. They're producing something for the market with their hands while they walk from one work in the landscape to another job in the landscape. Everything is officially divided into plots, but they move among them. The women reinstalled the commons with their feet, with their hands, with their work of conservation. This is human ecology. It's material, it's political, it's economic. For me, this requires a science that allows us to use methods like oral history, like life histories. Luis recently told me about his lizards when he was studying in Kansas and somewhere else where this lizard lived. And he used life histories, but he couldn't interview the lizards, and the lizards didn't share their thoughts of how they organize. He had to measure a bunch of difficult things and repeat experiments. With a person, with a community, we can speak with people who are inventing in their landscape. We don't need to go and measure them as if they were objects in an exotic study. We can work with them. Instead of collaborating, we can co-elaborate science that's used to learn and build new things. The end of the thoughts of a scientist. I'm going to do a more formal survey with people of the community and a study of the biodiversity in their community, in their landscape, to be able to document that peasant ecology in this zone is rich in biological diversity, in diversity of products and knowledge, and that people have many strategies in the face of a global problem, which is of the epic. They're just on the border. Now they almost can't grow anything with rain, and now they need to buy GMO seeds to plant, and they lost the last two harvests. They're against a big wall. and I go to document what they've done, to have one more tool in the face of the ridiculous projects that were being brought there, and the way these people were dealing with a woman. I told a woman I want to speak about history and your environmental education and how you came to know the forest, the water, the grasses. What was your formation, your process of formation? And what's changed? She knew I worked with trees. She said they cut the forest. It wasn't bad. And now there's light because before there were hyenas. And we were afraid of the hyenas to go look for water. It wasn't easy, Missy. But now it's light and the street is open. And a young man walks on through the street and you think, you might think that this man is a hyena. She was saying, my world, her world has fallen apart. The relation that the ecology had become so undone that the social network had come undone. I think we have to look for many more life histories like this to redo ecologies, remake ecologies, to co-elaborate them, not collaborate with projects, but co-elaborate new worlds that let us to leave wall land. Thank you.